This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there listening to us. Welcome to episode 108 of TPF Live, the world's fastest hour of racing talk. I'm Rob Tiansen, joined alongside the ladies of TPF in Brooklyn Jackson and Sky Twig. And still Women's History Month, so I'm surrounded by the women of TPF, but that's the way it's going to be because Nathan Solomon abandoned me in the middle of March Madness. But that's okay. We roll. I mean, I'm rocking a shirt that,
yes,
you know, supports women, so why not? I'm into the theme, but not just because in March. It's all the time. But anyways, you heard the voice of Sky. She's really, really ready to get started. I know Brooklyn is too, and this is an exciting show because this is the post-Phoenix pre-Bristol edition. So we're leaving the West Coast and getting ready for an almost short track season because in between Bristol and Richmond is going to be my hometown track, COTA, or Circuit of the Americas. But we won't talk about COTA just yet. We're going to focus on what happened at Phoenix and then get on to Bristol. I know Phoenix is something we want to put in our rearview mirror in a way because it was a... We'll get to that in a moment. I won't give my opinion just yet. But also, too, in the hot seat, because that's what you folks listen to, we have Jerry Nadeau in the house. And I'm super excited about that. Do you want to give a shout-out to Discourse Magazine for making that opportunity possible for us? So a little bit later on, you'll hear from the 2000 Napa 500 at Atlanta Raceway winner, and also the man who has really found life after what happened to him in that really frightening and life-changing accident at Richmond Raceway that folks may remember about 21 years ago at this point. But we'll hear from Jerry a little bit later. But right now, let's go bring in the girls of TPF. So we'll start off with Sky and hear from Brooklyn. Sky, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited.
I am too. It's going to be a good show and a good race weekend. Kind of a short race weekend, but nevertheless, it seems like it's going to be one of those really busy and got to get ready to get a lot of things kind of done race weekend. I mean, I'm so super stoked. We even have Bristol in my background with Kyle Larson right to my right or to my left. I don't know. I don't do directions. And Eric Jones is on the inside line. I'm super stoked. This is not even obviously from this year because, as you folks know, the walls are red and white. It's almost like the Winston times. So, no, we're not going to smoke cigarettes. No kids. Don't smoke at home. Not good. And no, I don't like the smell of cigarettes. I like the smells of Sunoco and gas and stuff, but that's a little too much information. I like the smell of Goodyear tires. I don't know. I'm trying to be supportive of NASCAR, okay? How are you doing today, Brooklyn? I hope everything's been going well.
I'm good. I sound horrible, but I'm doing good.
You sound great, all things considered. And before we get started, folks, do want to let you know, Brooklyn's under the threat of a tornado watch. So like she told me, and I'll say this to you guys, if y'all hear a siren, it's not because she's at the Dawsonville Pool Hall. So don't worry. Chase Elliott hasn't won, but let's just hope nothing happens tonight because we want to have her back every single episode that we have back after to this week. So be safe. If she happens to have to go away, she's got a good reason to do so. Well, before we get started on TPF and Podium Perspectives and Hot Seat, of course, it is time to hear from our presenting sponsor, SpoilerDiecast.com. Hey there, racing fans. Are you on the lookout for the latest NASCAR, IndyCar, or F1 diecasts in the market? Well, look no further than SpoilerDiecast.com for the latest and greatest and fastest shipping in the industry. And did you know, if you use code TPF on orders of $20 or more, you'll get free shipping and 5% off of your orders. And that's really easy money to save. So head on over to SpoilerDiecast.com and use code TPF to get 5% off of your orders of $20 or more. And if you happen to be in the area in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Spoiler Diecast is now open for business at their storefront location at 6004 Highview Drive, Suite E in Fort Wayne, Indiana. That's 6004 Highview Drive, Suite E, Fort Wayne, Indiana. SpoilerDiecast.com for the latest and greatest in diecast collectibles. We'll see you in the fast lane. And yes, indeed, folks, you can stop by their storefront location in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Or if you're anywhere else, Or if you're in Fort Wayne and you don't feel like going to the storefront location, which I hope you do, you can use that promo code TPF to get free shipping and 5% off your orders of $20 or more. And yes, it's really easy to do. It's almost like going to, I don't know, let me think of a store that's really common. It's like going to Old Navy, and you'll probably spend your super cash super easy. I happen to do the same thing too all the time. So just saying, you can get yourself 5% off and free shipping. So do it up, get those new diecast cars, be cool. And you might even get to have stuff that I'm holding in my hand right now. In fact, I actually have a Kyle Larson 2024 car from SpoilerDiecast.com I'm holding because Evan and his team are really fast and awesome that way. So do it up. Support a small business, support us, and you're in victory lane just like that. Well, let's head on over to the racetrack right now because it's time to get to Pody Perspectives powered by SpoilerDiecast.com. Now for our very first topic, I know we got to get the elephant in the room out of the way. Obviously, Christopher Bell snapped Chevrolet's 3-race winning streak. And if you count last year's season finale, Chevrolet's 4-race winning streak, because remember, Ross Chastain won at Phoenix. Well, Chevrolet was kind of MIA and PIR, or now Phoenix Raceway. Sorry, Harry, I made fun of you there, but it was kind of a Toyota. Love Fest. So if you love the Camry XSE, this was the race for you. And you probably are probably ordering a Camry right now from your local Toyota dealer. If you're in Texas, you're probably getting it at Cedar Park Toyota. Not a hidden reference to a photographer on our team at all. Anyways, Christopher Bell dominated. He definitely closed things out, overcame a stage 2 situation that put him back in the field, and he was the only driver who pretty much could drive his way through from the back to the front. So we'll start off with Sky in here from Brooklyn. What were your thoughts on Christopher's victory and the cup race at Phoenix? And did that short track package work at all?
I mean, I'm happy for Bell. I like Christopher Bell, so it's nice to see him. It's always nice to see him win. And it's always nice to see a driver who deserves the win to win, you know. So it's nice to see that happen. And I'm all for breaking the streak because I like a little variety. I like to switch it up every now and again. So I'm happy a Toyota won. I wish the Fords would figure it out because it seems like only one of them has figured it out so far, maybe two. So I'm hoping they can eventually get it together. But I don't know. On the package, the race didn't wow me. And I hate to say it because I'm usually pretty positive. I think it still has a long way to go, in my opinion. And I've noticed the fans on social media and everything and what they're saying. And it seems like a lot of people are just – they weren't too impressed, I guess. But I don't know. Hopefully NASCAR can take it and maybe improve and make it just a little bit better. Because, you know, with the finale being here, I don't know. I feel like it should be better racing produced, especially if you're going to have it at the – you know, have this place as the finale.
Oh, I 100% agree with that. I mean, this is supposed to be the site of what decides our championship. I know it's a one race wins all championship format nowadays, but you want to have a really good product on the track. I know everybody says at Phoenix, oh, the facilities are amazing. Everything about it is great. But it's like, I don't know if it's the track. I don't know if it's the car. In last year's races, I wouldn't say they were classic, but for whatever reason, the championship race was not that bad. And I really didn't feel like we saw a lot of passing on Sunday afternoon. And I'm not just saying that because the Chevrolet struggled. I mean, honestly, when people can say, oh, did you see the pass for 12th place? Or how about that battle for 17th? I'm like, that's not what I'm here to cover. I'm here to cover what goes on in the front. No offense to the teams in the midfield or 20th on back. I want to see good racing where it matters, where there's points involved, where the championship contenders are concerned. None of that happened. And I feel like the car a little too equal because I looked at the lap times on the NASCAR monitor and scoring, and I was like, man, there's really not a lot of difference between whoever's running 6th to like 17th. And that might sound good and dandy if you're a new fan, but that pretty much means like if you're running on foot and you're trying to catch that person ahead of you, if you're both running at the same speed, there's no way you can catch your competitor. And that's how I felt about the race. The package, I knew we were kind of in trouble based on Friday's practice session. When I watched, a lot of talented drivers had problems, like Tyler Reddick spinning out. I know Logano was the fastest in practice, but to see his weekend kind of deteriorate, and I'm sorry to talk about that, Sky, it's like that's terrible to start off a weekend super fast, and then all of a sudden in qualifying, it looked like he was going to make the top 10. I think he missed it, not by much. And then in the race, they just, I don't know, like you said, the Team Penske Fords, they're a little uneven right now. Well, we couldn't really gauge Austin Cindric because he got wrecked, what, like lap six or something, super duper early again. And it seems like whoever's been involved in wrecks early in these races this year, it just continues to pile on. Austin Dillon got involved. It's a crazy situation. But Blaney, of course, seems to grind out these finishes and remind people that, hey, if you think he lucked into the championship, no, he's really good. He can get the good finishes that you need, like a Jimmy Johnson type of character or driver. So anyone who kind of thinks that Blaney's been undeserving because he was a one-off champion, no, he's really good. And in fact, people, he's leading the points, not by much, but he's the new points leader. So sometimes a little consistency in this day and age still counts in the world of NASCAR Cup Series racing. But Brooklyn, what do you think about the race and how do you feel about the short track package?
So, first of all, huge congratulations to Christopher and the 20 team. I mean, they put together an amazing race, obviously. I have such a hard time with Phoenix in general. Like you said a second ago, it acts like a super speedway in some ways, but then it's a mile. I mean, it just doesn't really know what it wants to be. And it was super difficult to pass. I mean, there was not a lot of passing. Once you kind of saw people fall back, like they were done, they were toast. So I think to truly judge it, we need to see it more. I almost hate to judge it off of one race. I just out of fairness, I think. I mean, I was a little bit underwhelmed personally. But I think, I mean, it's like with the next gen car. I mean, we just have to work it out a little bit and keep working on stuff to get it smoother.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Phoenix is just a sample size as to what this package is supposed to do. And really, the only time he's ever seen this done in anger was at Phoenix during the off season, which is why we were able to decide on basically no diffuser and the taller spoiler. So it's kind of a tough judgment because if I were to judge the short track package overall, just based off Phoenix, I would not look forward to Martinsville and Richmond or even New Hampshire later this year. But thankfully, NASCAR probably will look at the feedback. And I think towards the end of the race, Phoenix was a little better, but it's also to the point where you're almost scrapping for some meats on the chicken noodle soup that's pretty much just broth. Because when in our team chat, I know Nathan Solomon, who's by the way is off this week because he's doing a little thing called college basketball coverage for St. Bonaventure. He was saying, oh, I thought the action was good. I mean, you got to see passing throughout the field. And I'm like, yeah, but for 8th to 20th? And no offense to those teams. I mean, these are not mid-back teams. I mean, Kyle Larson was back there. Chase Elliott fell back there. William Byron was back there. And Denny Hamlin, once he spun out on his own during stage three, he fell back there. He really couldn't make any passing opportunities happen at all. But the thing is, when you say that 8th to 20th is a good passing, battle situation, I'm just like, I know it's unrealistic to expect what we saw at Daytona, Atlanta, and even Las Vegas.
Right.
But this is also the site of the championship four race. And that leaves me a little concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what is concerning about it. It's just like when you think about it through that mindset, you're like, this is kind of an important track.
It is. And I think you said it right. It's underwhelming. Like, I love Phoenix. Don't get me wrong. And I know people always say it's got great facilities. It's a beautiful track in terms of where it's at. And you can drive up north and you could see the Grand Canyon. And it's Arizona's a beautiful state. Phoenix and Avondale is a great location. But it's also like, okay, well, is it the track? Or is it the car that's the issue? That's kind of what I'm wanting to see. And like you said, we just had a sample size. Who knows? It's like when you cook food and you're experimenting with this recipe, the first batch is going to be crappy. So who's to say the second or third is going to be the same or it could be better? So we just got to see what happens when we get to Richmond at the end of this month for Easter weekend. And then when we kick off April, it's Martinsville, which I know it's going to, well, we'll see. I want to be cautiously optimistic because
Right.
it's a weird conundrum, people, because I would say in the last few years, up until we had the next gen car, everyone looked forward to they look forward to short track racing, admittedly. And now all of a sudden we're like, oh, please come on, intermediate racetracks. Let's just get here now. And we used to hate those tracks. And now it's like the best part of NASCAR Cup Series racing. So, well, fortunately, we don't have to think about that package this weekend because at Bristol, which is my background from last year's Bristol Night Race, we don't have that package. We're back to last year's package. As I broke into puberty, folks, I'm sorry, I squeaked right there. But I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. We'll talk more about the whole racing lane situation at Bristol because I got some interesting information during this week's pressers, thanks to Bristol Motor Speedway. But we'll get into that here in a little bit. Now, Chandler Smith, he was excited to win on Saturday, not because of the fact that he hadn't won a race in basically a year and came close to winning many races with Colic Racing last year, but because of the fact he's also been close to winning races with Joe Gibbs Racing. Well, it finally all came together on Saturday afternoon, and he let a higher DD know about this quite a lot. I mean, I felt like I was in mass. Okay, I'm not trying to piss off anybody. I'm trying to be funny. Ha 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 ha. Oh, sorry. I know. Committed a sin. Yeah, I'm a Catholic. Okay, I can have a little fun, right? But anyways, Chandler Smith thanked God so many times. I was just like, I wonder if God was watching the race. But anyways, while he was thanking God, poor Justin Allgaier could have used a hug and a prayer because he should have won the race, in my opinion. And then 5 laps to go, I had flashbacks to Dale Earnhardt in 1990 at the Daytona 500 when his rear tire went, kaput, and he lost the race. Unlike Earnhardt, Allgaier wrecked into the wall and not just like backed it into the fence. He wrecked it super hard. I was like, oh, I hope he's okay. Thank goodness he was, but I felt for him. And Joey Logano, I think he had it really said well. And we'll hear from Sky in Brooklyn here shortly. I love what Joey said. He was saying something like, oh, this is when you say race that you feel like racing sucks. So we've got two spectrums to think about here. In terms of Saturday's race, what are your thoughts on Chandler Smith winning and the heartbreak for Justin Allgaier?
I was thinking about this, and I'm happy for Chandler Smith. I'm happy when any of the Xfinity guys win because it's nice for them to get spotlight. They all work hard down there, so I'm always happy for when they win. But I think I'm just a little more hurt for Allgaier than I am happy for Chandler, if that makes any sense. Like, I was so hurt for Allgaier. Like, that is a tough one to lose. And you said you thought of Earnhardt. I thought of Kyle Larson back in Pocono. I think it was Pocono. He was gonna like tie a record or break a record for like the most consecutive wins, and then just on the last lap, tire went down, it was done. And then Alex Bowman, I think, ended up winning that race. But it's tough. Those are tough losses. Like, that's when you do think like racing just sucks.
And Joey said it so perfectly, and it wasn't like one of Joey's canned responses. Like, he genuinely said this on the air, and I was like, oh my God, this is raw Logano unfiltered. And yeah, you did that to feel like your heart goes out to Justin and the 17 because obviously they know how to win at Phoenix and they need the victory because John Hunter Nemechek's been hogging victory lane. Joe Gibbs Racing's just not sharing it. Austin Hill's kind of been a hog as well, so I'm sure Justin and Pullman wanted to win the race for the number 17, but it just didn't come together. And yes, it does remind me of Kyle Larson as well at Pocono, going into the third turn, and you think he's got into the bag. That's kind of how I felt. And in fact, funny story, folks, I was actually getting the recap ready for Saturday's Xfinity race, And I already came up with the headline. I had everything set. All I needed to do was just write the recap, put the photos in. And all of a sudden, I hear the 7 car crash into the wall, and I see it on TV, and I was like, oh, no, I just jinxed them. I'm sorry, Justin. So I will never, ever pre-prepare a race recap again. I'll just wait until the race is over. But wow, that one stunk for sure for him. And on the flip side, for Chandler Smith, I think this reaffirms to folks that he is a great driver, great young driver. Again, I'm not going to go any further because I know it's kind of, you know, Lent season and all, but you can draw the line on that one, folks, in my opinion. But nevertheless, congrats to Chandler, to the number 81 team. And yeah, I don't think this is the last time they're going to win a race, but I certainly don't think Justin Allgaier is going to just, you know, put his head between his knees and feel sorry for himself. When they go to COTA, I expect that 7 car to be pretty fast, starting off on Friday and onto Saturday afternoon, just before sunset hits here in Austin, Texas. Now let's go hear from Brooklyn about what she thought about Saturday's race, because I'm sure she's loaded with opinions right now.
Yeah. So I fully thought that Justin Allgaier had it. I was fully expecting, I think you were writing the Xfinity recap, and I was like coming up with like titles in my mind for you. I was like, oh, like he could do that, like just do this, like that would be fun, like just fun little like aspects of the recap. And I was like, then he spun, and I was like, oh my heck. I was like, what just happened? I was like, that is insane. I mean, that is horrible luck. I hope they do take this week to kind of recoup and regather themselves. I know that had to have been hard, but I know Chandler Smith and the 81 team, I know they're super happy, and they couldn't be more deserving. I mean, like you said, he's coming off a winless streak. And he, like you said, he just had really bad luck last year. I mean, he's by no means like did not drive well last year. I mean, he's obviously an amazing driver, super talented, but just ran into some bad luck, and now he's in, different equipment. He's in Joe Gibbs equipment now. I think we're just seeing a culmination of his luck changing and him figuring out different equipment. I think I fully expect them to have a great year.
Absolutely. And I think it's a testament to the fact that he's back home at Toyota, because that's where he started off in the truck series with KBM. And I think he won the season finale at Phoenix, I want to say a year, 2 or 3 years ago, as a matter of fact. So he definitely knows how to win at Phoenix. He knows how to win in general. So it's validation on the stand for him. And I guess if I had to put myself in his shoes, I could understand the whole praising to a deity from above who probably is not watching racing, but he's probably like, okay, I'll take the commish for giving me kudos, even though that was all you, bro. I know. I mean, I'm making cracks about it, but I'm also like, okay, how many of us have probably done that same thing too, where we're like wanting something good to happen, and if it does, we say those kinds of things. So I get it.
I absolutely get it too. I mean, I've done it. Yeah, I think it's just very human.
It is. I just like to poke fun at it, because it's almost, it's not the absurdity. It's more just like it's just like, oh, wait a second. He probably gets so many requests. Okay. Like, I'm sure he wasn't the only driver in the field. I'm sure Justin Allgaier was probably like, all right, 5 laps to go. Come on, let me have this win. I need this victory. And then I don't think, you know, who from above would want him to have a left rear tire going down and slam into the wall and be so heartbroken. I mean, that's pretty cruel. So I'm not saying Chandler Smith was hoping for that to happen. I think he was like, whoa, wait a second here. I've got a chance to win? Like, huh?
So look at the opportunity in front of me.
Right. I think we were all stunned. Now, staying with Xfinity, even though Nathan's not here, because again, he's doing something called College Hoops for St. Bonaventure, Connor Zilish has been announced to drive for the number 88 NASCAR Xfinity Series efforts of Junior Motorsports, starting off at Watkins Glen. That's a big deal because a certain driver who I worked with last year as their PR guy, he told me at COTA that if I had to keep my eyes on somebody who has a bright future ahead of them, it's Connor Zilish. And sure enough, he's backed those words up from that driver because Connor is going to turn some heads, I'm sure, in the Xfinity Series with his talented skills. He's shown what he can do in TA2. I am not going to be surprised to see what he can do at Watkins Glen, Kansas, Homestead. And oh, by the way, the season's finale at Phoenix, which I'm sure there's a lot of there's no pressure at all to race in the championship four race
at
Phoenix,
right?
When you're young, 18 year old. None at all. None at all.
So easy. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Sign me up. But hey, he's going to be 18 this summer. So I think it kind of reminds me what happened with Sam Mayer. They picked him up. They had him try a few races. And look at Sam now. I mean, I know he's got terrible misfortunes this year. But my point being is Dale and Kelly know how to pick these great young drivers and get them. I hate saying the word groomed. I'll say mentor them to be superstars of the future. So I'm just curious to get y'all's thoughts about Connor and how big a break this is for him to go to Xfinity Racing later this summer.
You know, I don't know too much about this kid, but from what I've seen, you know, he is extremely impressive, and this is a huge deal, a huge break. And it is as big of a deal and a break it is, you got to make sure you got to perform too, because you could have, you know, four races and perform, you know, if you don't perform well, then where do you go from there?
Exactly. Because we've seen some drivers get their opportunity and then they flame out when they've been put in the hot seat. But Connor for sure is someone who's going to make a name for himself. And Carson Quapel, that's another driver we need to watch for, because he's actually going to be making his debut in a couple of weeks, which is super awesome. And of course, he's the son of Travis Quapel, a former NASCAR truck champion. And then Bubba Pollard is going to race in Richmond at the end of this month. So it seems like Junior Motorsports is kind of making that 88 car. This is a throwback, I'm going to say. This is almost like the Chance 2 Motorsports team. Remember that team, folks? I hope you do, because that was during the Dale Jr., Martin Truex Jr., Talladega VR days. Yeah, I'm a little old, I know, but it's fun to reference some sim racing references that nobody's gonna understand these days, but that's okay, we're cool. But it's gonna be super fun to watch Connor race for the number 88 team later this year. And in fact, the other races he'll race at are Kansas, Homestead, and Phoenix. So, oh my goodness, that's a lot of pressure to race in the championship four race for Connor. So they're gonna put a lot of trust in him to bring that 88 car home in one piece, to say the least, with Chief Jason Stockert atop the box. Brooklyn, what are your thoughts on this?
Like you said, Dale and Kelly know how to pick some of the absolute best young talent in our country the national scene. They have done a phenomenal job. And I fully expect, I just recently started following Connor, and I fully expect him to, do very well in the Xfinity scene, and just grow and learn and do well.
And he is a natural talent. I personally got to see him drive at COTA in a TA2 car, and he looked like a seasoned veteran out there, just, you know, leading the race, looking really confident. He did have a mechanical issue that pretty much derailed his efforts, but he's going to be so good wherever he goes. He's going to be super tough at the road course at Watkins Glen. And I'm interested to see how he'll handle intermediate like Kansas, because we know he also does some short track stuff as well. I think he's done some car store races. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he'll do, to say the least, in that number 88 car, which I call the all-star car, because also in that seat later this month is going to be Carson Quapel, son of Travis Quapel. He'll make his debut actually at Martinsville in April. And then Bubba Pollard, who's a short track superstar in his own right, He's to be racing with Reims sponsorship at Richmond on Easter weekend. So that's going to be super fun to watch that ADA car doing its thing. I'm not going to get into the whole debate about Dale Jr.'s Hellman's campaign because I don't eat that food called bread. But anyways, that's my thoughts. That's our thoughts, rather, on Connor Zilish. And we look forward to seeing what he'll do. I know Nathan's going to probably like jump and holler and say, I want to do this story about Connor. And I'll be like, you know what? You do you, baby boo. You got this. Anyways, now it's going to get to the fun part that we introduced last week, where I asked the girls sort of like superlative questions. And I thought, let's bring it back because this was a lot of fun to do with Sky and Brooklyn. Now, in this case here, let's start off with sort of a positive here. Who to you stood out at Phoenix for better or for worse in any of the races? And yes, we'll include Arca because I know Casey Campbell's going to be like, hey, what about Arca? And I'll be like, you know what, bro? This is when we'll bring up Arca. So who stood out to you for better or for worse and why?
Joey Logano. He's had some of the worst luck recently, I feel like. I mean, bless them. And Ty Gibbs, I was really impressed with how they ran on Sunday. So that would be my better and worse. I like seeing Gibbs run up front.
I could see Sky's face about that answer, but for worse. And she's like giving us the grimace about it. Yeah, I know. She's already had some not so happy thoughts about that Green Hunt Brothers pizza car, but hopefully they'll reconsider that color of the car because green at a racetrack is bad luck, apparently, except on the flag. But
that's what it's cursed. I mean, good heavens. I don't know what. I mean, I guess that was an approach they were trying to use to change their lock, but it took a side effect. I don't know. Really, since like the playoffs last season, I mean, he's just had horrible luck.
And it's not because he's forgotten how to drive a race car. He knows how to drive it. I mean,
no, I mean, he's Joey Logano, right?
He's a two-time cup champion.
Right.
It's so odd. I mean, he has barely scored, like, on average, over 10 points a race. Other than Vegas, it's been the start from, can I say it? It's been the start from HE double hockey sticks for number 22.
It really has. It seriously has.
Oh. It's tough. And Sky over there is just looking at us like, don't worry, it's going to get better before. It's already gotten worse, so it'll get better, like the saying goes.
So to me, you know, I'm not, don't hold me at this, but I'm going Ryan Blaney. You know, he went from back in 19th to finish fifth on a day that you even said earlier, passing was impossible. Like, it was not an easy day. And even when he got out of the car, you could tell that he was exhausted. And that just, like, that to me is just so impressive. And it shows a true champion. Like you said, like, he deserved that championship. He's earning it. He's proving it every time he's gotten the car this year. I mean, I think he is probably one of, if not the best performing Ford, he's one of the best performing Fords right now.
Great thoughts right there. Oh, goodness, this is a tough one for me because I like your choice of Ryan Blaney's guy. I actually was going to think about choosing him for that. For better or for worse, I'm going to be positive since the next one's going to be kind of the opposite end of things as we did last week. Ooh, this is tough because last week, well, okay. I think this one's going to be an obvious one, I guess. I'll stay with the Ford team banner. I'll say that Chris Buescher actually stood out to me because he started 14th. He really didn't do much in stage one. And I know in stage two, he drove up to 10th, but you have to remember he's been off to kind of a slow start this season. And he even said so himself during a media availability before the Bristol race weekend. He's like, well, I'm the worst guy to ask about this because we have our results, which I thought was like, whoa, wait a second, Chris, you're a good driver. His exact quote was,
I'm probably the worst one to ask right now. When you look at our results on the year, one thing I will say is we've had a lot of speed every single place we've gone. We've been able to lead laps at the first three races. We've been able to runner up last week was huge for us. Our long run speed was fantastic. So, certainly feel like we are heading in the right direction. I've got some stuff to dial in still. I think that it's worth noting for us is last weekend we were able to run or finish very strong with both our race cars and get back here and feel like we still have a ton of work to do to balance out for this new Mustang and to figure out how to optimize it. So I feel like we left a lot on the table, and that's a good thing when you run as good as you do, to say that there was a lot more out there, that puts us in a good spot heading back.
Well, I think so too. And to overcome that right front being loose and then he smacks a turn two wall and makes the Las Vegas crew work a little harder to repair the safer barrier and then to get a second place finish at Phoenix, kudos to you because, so boy, to get a top five at Phoenix, it's like trying to run a 5K in super humid weather. So well done to him. And we got to give the props to the Ford banner because they're fighting an uphill battle, it seems, right now. Against the Chevrolets and Toyotas, well, especially the Toyotas right now, because I feel like they found a little something that works on these somewhat interesting racetracks. But now we're heading to Bristol, and that's going to be something to say the least, for sure. Now we're going to talk about who needs a goodies headache powder or a hug, as Candy Mane would say back in the RPM Tonight days. Who deserves a goodies headache powder for every headache they endured from Phoenix?
I'm going to give mine to Justin Allgaier. I can't imagine. I mean, he was so close. He could see the light, he could smell victory lane. I mean, goodness gracious, I can't even imagine.
It was so depressing. It's like seeing something bad happen to someone good, I guess you could say, because all of it's like you're watching a baseball game and the pitcher's having a perfect game. You don't want to see anything. And all of a sudden, someone has to hit off a single or a bunt off of that pitcher. And you're just like, really? That had to happen? Like, come on. So, yeah, I think he's easily this week's Goody's Headache Powder Award winner. But what do you think, Sky?
I could go the obvious route and say Joey Logano, but I think I'm gonna go with Austin Cindric because he's been up front competing a lot of these races. I mean, he's really shown up a lot this year. And to get it to end so early over something that really wasn't even your fault, to get caught up in something like that and just have to be out so early in the race is just honestly like that. I agree. Well, he needs a hug for sure.
It has been a tough year, and it's hard when you watch your two teammates have some relative success. I know Logano been a sluggish start, but that's not because he's not been good. It's just unfortunate circumstances. And Ryan Blaney, as we've been saying from the top of the show, he's just been rocking it. It's got to be tough for him because he knows he's better than the results are showing. So yeah, I think he's definitely worthy of that goodies headache powder for sure. I would give mine to, this one's another tough one. He finished the race. He qualified fourth, but I have to say Eric Jones probably gets this one because I actually picked Eric Jones to win the race. I even said as much on X or Twitter, whatever we call it these days. And he got fourth in stage one. And then all of a sudden, just everything didn't go right for him. And unfortunately, he got involved in an accident later in the race. That really derailed his efforts. So I'm going to give it to him because I feel like he is certainly one of those Toyotas who could break through and easily do what Martin Truex Jr. can do, or Tyler Reddick can do, or even Christopher Bell. So Legacy Motor Club is they're on the precipice of doing good things, and I think of the two drivers right now, I would definitely put money on Eric. Well, I don't bet, so don't hate me, NASCAR. Eric Jones is probably the one I would pick to go win a race for Legacy Motor Club. I know certain folks are probably feeling a little ill will towards John Hunter Nemechek, but we ain't gonna go there right now. I promise. Maybe later on during After Dark, After Hours times After Dark TPF Live. Now it's time for our favorite part of our show because this is when we really get to be unfiltered with our winning time picks. So let's name our picks for Saturday's NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series WeatherGuard Truck Race at Bristol. Goodness gracious, I gotta say, Sky, these races are getting longer and longer to say that I actually have to read them because sometimes I'm gonna be like reading an old name. But the defending race winner, if you want to be technical, it's Joey Logano. So there's some good news for you on that one. And then Sunday, we have the NASCAR Cup Series Food City 500. And yes, Luna, my sister, This is your favorite race title because you kept talking about this during the NASCAR 2 days in 1996. And our defending race winner, technically, is Christopher Bell. Why am I saying technically, folks? Because these are the drivers who won last year's spring races at Bristol when it was on a dirt surface. Well, we don't have the dirt anymore. We're back to the concrete. And like I said at the top of the show, the walls, well, when you see the recording, I have the black wall version from the Bristol night race. They have changed these walls to the Winston red and white, which is super awesome, super cool. So gotta say, good job, Bristol Motor Speedway, on throwing it back to the 90s, the best decade ever besides the 2000s. I have to say that because the two co-hosts of mine were born in the 2000s, and that would be discrimination if I don't praise the year or decade that they were born in. I guess I should say the 80s are pretty good too. There, I'm included. Anyways, let's hear from Sky and Brooklyn on their picks to win this weekend.
Okay, so I thought about this. I think I'm going to go with Raja again in trucks because I feel like he just got the ball rolling. And I don't think he's going to stop anytime soon, in my opinion. And for Xfinity, I think, like you said earlier, I'm going Justin Allgaier because he wants redemption. That hurt. That last race in Phoenix, it hurt. So he needs redemption. I think he's going to come back and win. And this pick, I'm going for Cup. I'm going with Chase Elliott because he's performed well at Bristol, and I think it's just his time. He got to win eventually. I'm Team Elliott, so I'm hoping that this is a good track for him and he can finally get back in victory lane.
Well, wouldn't that be something if the most popular driver wins on Sunday on St. Patrick's Day? I guess the Dawson Pool Hall will be getting pretty lucky with that siren on Sunday afternoon in Dawsonville. So those could be some really solid choices right there with Raja and Chase. How about you, Brooklyn? What do you think for the truck and cup races?
I think for the truck race, Kyle Busch is going to get it. And then for my cup pick, I think Chase Elliott is so close to snapping his winless streak also. I think that's going to happen this week. So he's my pick this week for Bristol.
Look at that. You girls are in agreement on picks, especially for the cup race. So I think y'all are conspiring as to who's going to win on Sunday afternoon. But just saying, there's been a vibe that the number nine team's going to get out of their funk. And I know we were saying Logano has been on a bad luck situation, but it seems like Chase starting to turn the corner. His health has gotten better. That surgery's out of the way. So maybe the swagger is back. So
walking into last week early last weekend, I thought it was going to happen last weekend just because I've just kind of watching the nine team. I've felt like it's getting closer, but I think it's going to happen very soon. So I honestly expect, I wouldn't be surprised at all if it happened this weekend.
And he's been so close to winning on the dirt track he's been so close to winning on the concrete surface. Remember in 2020 during that COVID season, who is leading the field or close to leading the race within the last five laps? Oh, yes. Car number nine. There was a certain driver he duked it out with and things went awry. And I know they were kind of arguing through their masks, Joey Logano. But Elliott knows how to get around a concrete version of Bristol. So I think those are some solid picks that y'all have given. And again, the ladies are going with Elliott. So let me go and be as unbiased as possible for this weekend's race picks. So for the truck race, I actually am going to go with Roger Carruth. I'm going to agree with Sky on that. The reason why, in my case, for Roger to win on Saturday night, he's got so much confidence. And then basically in the Thursday Zoom press conference for Bristol, I mean, he's in a good place mentally speaking. And when a driver is in that zone, he's not worrying a whole lot. That's dangerous. That honestly could add as much speed to that truck as the engine's horsepower count can be or how the setup is for this racetrack. Because as you can tell, Bristol is kind of a two, sometimes three wide racetrack. Look at that. You can have, there's a car literally behind my head in this photo. And then you can go to the top lane, the middle lane, the bottom lane. But Raj is such a talented driver. He knows how to get around most tracks because of his sim to reality experience. So I think for Saturday night, I'll go with Raj Carruth. Then for Sunday, I mean, I don't want to say Kyle Larson because that's like basically the easiest pick to make for any race. So let me kind of think outside the box here and say Carson Hocevar is going to upset the field on Sunday afternoon. I know
Oh,
y'all are looking at me like I'm
okay.
crazy. Yeah, I know. Why would I go with Carson? He's a rookie. Well, why not? He's impressed me so far in terms of the rookie class.
No, he's
He
been very impressive.
he's been so good. I mean, yes, he's been involved in accidents, but even when he's been in accidents, guess what? He finds a way back towards a good finish. He doesn't know when to quit. I like that attitude from him.
Right, he bounces back.
He's a very resilient driver. And in many respects, and I hope this comes off as a compliment to Carson, he kind of reminds me of Ernie Irvin. And by that, I mean that he doesn't get razzled by a whole lot, even if he's an aggressive driver. Like, witness this, folks, okay? Other than Daytona, when he got wrecked out, and there was no way he could finish the race with that destroyed race car. Atlanta, he finishes 19th, even though he went for a two-wheeler towards the end of the race, still got a top 20 finish in that crazy race. We go to Vegas a couple weeks ago, get the top 15. Does a good job, beats Corey LaJoie, keeps calm. And then last weekend at Phoenix, I know, I said passing was impossible, and yes, he did lose some positions. But listen, a rookie getting a 15th place finish and just finishing one position behind Kyle Larson, it's not a bad result. And it's to no surprise that Carson's ranked 23rd in the point standings. I know it doesn't sound that great. It's not a really sexy statistic, but Carson knows how to achieve good results. We saw that last year when he was basically finishing out the season for Legacy Motor Club's number 42 car during their transition from Chevrolet to Toyota. And he could have won. Actually, I thought he could have won Bristol last enough in the summer race because he was in the top 10, I think top three during stages two and three. So I think he'll upset us, and that could be fun and throw things into chaos when we get to the playoffs. I don't know. I mean, I've picked, the obvious contenders, and I have swung and missed, or I've missed the layup or the 3-point shot. So at this point,
Picking's a hit or miss, but one thing that I really do admire about Carson that you touched on, he seriously is one of the most, for being so young, he is so mild and calm, and I mean, he couldn't be calmer. And
it's almost like,
that's very unique for someone so young. Because even some of the greatest drivers, you're young, you don't have a lot of experience yet, obviously. And the first time something happens, I mean, you get like a little rattled. Like, it's like, oh my gosh, like, what, like, how do we handle this? Like, how are we gonna fix this? Like, what's the next steps? But he's like, his mindset is just kind of automatically like, okay, like, this has happened. This is fixable, like whether we have to just like work at it next week and bounce back, or I mean, fix it now.
And it shows. And I think the key thing too that we don't really talk about is his crew chief, Luke Lambert, who has worked with a lot of aggressive drivers, young drivers. The one driver I think of that he's worked with really well is Ryan Newman. And he's got himself another rocket ship of a driver in Carson Hocevar. I think he's like a younger Ryan Newman in that respect.
Absolutely.
And neat little fun fact about Carson Hocevar is that when he was a young driver racing in quarter midgets, one of our photographers, Josh James, actually worked with him on setting up his quarter midgets. So, yeah, little
That's true.
fun. It's a
I'll
little
never
fun
forget the
McNugget.
first time I met Carson. He walked into the media center. And it was just kind of spontaneous. He just happened to have a second, and so he and his PR person just decided like, hey, let's just go chat with the media people for a second. And they just walked in, and Carson just like there were chairs on the stage, but he just sat down on the, he didn't use to hop on the stage and sit in a chair or anything big and showy like that. He just sat down like crisscross on the stage and was like, hey, you guys, and like talked to literally every single one of us. I mean, couldn't be nicer. Such an amazing person.
Yeah, he's genuine. And that's something we need to have in any sport, is a genuine sports figure who can be an individual for the masses. That's why people gravitate towards him. They gravitate towards pretty much anyone in the USWNT squad, or, you know, the person's shirt I'm wearing. I'm not trying to be a fanboy, but I probably am. I don't care. I don't cover college sports, so I can fanboy all I want. But Carson's such a, he's such a good kid, and I've known him for a couple of years now, and I'm proud to see him having his success and making his way to the Cup Series. And I'm sure his younger self is probably pinching himself about it. So perhaps we'll get him at COTA next weekend, because it's looking really good in terms of getting a lot of interviews from these young drivers. But anyways, people, what do you think of our picks? Did Sky, Brooklyn, or I look like geniuses? Or do you have better picks? Why don't you hit us up on socials? No matter the platform, our handle is at the podium finish. And if you happen to get the two race winning picks correct, we will personally send you an InStock 2024 164 diecast car from spoilerdiecast.com. It's on us. Just tell us what your address is and your name, and we'll get it to you. Simple as that. So hit us up. I guess as the kids say, I don't know if you can give your picks on TikTok. And if you do, just make sure Brooklyn sees it, because I'm trying to figure out TikTok. I'm not hip to the square on that stuff yet. I'm trying, okay? I'll get there. But hopefully somebody makes the right winning picks and we'll see what happens. Brooklyn's been good, so listen to her. And don't listen to me. I could be a total jabroni with race picks. But anyways, I'm not a total jabroni when it comes to interviews, because coming up right now is the hot seat segment with Jerry Nadeau. Well, welcome to a very special edition of In the Hot Seat here for the Podium Finish and the Podium Finish Live. I'm Rob T. Ogson, and I can't tell you how excited I am to do this particular interview with this gentleman who, may I say, is one of the brightest drivers I ever got to watch as a kid. And if my 15-year-old self could be here right now, he'd be freaking out. But nevertheless, I'm still him. I'm just a lot older. We've got Jerry Nadeau. I can't believe I'm getting to say that. I'm so excited to have Jerry Nadeau here in the hot seat. So before we get started, Jerry, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, bud. I'm doing well. I've been busy today because I was helping a friend move shelving to another building. So I've been working my butt off the last 4 hours. Then I had to go pick up my vehicle that I'm sitting in now, because the head sensor of the overheating had to get changed. So it was another stupid electronics thing that went out on it. And so I got it fixed, and now I'm at my daughter's school picking her up when she gets out.
Just being a good dad while you're doing everything else in between. And well, hopefully we'll be one of the highlights of your day for sure as we get into the weekend. Well, first of all, Jerry, I got to say, as a young driver that grew up in Connecticut, you know, you were one of the first racers to capture my attention, because I grew up in Boston. And I'm just curious, who or what inspired you to get into racing?
My dad. You know, you got to really look back at my story. And my dad used to race at the Danbury Fairgrounds. And I used to go in there with my mom in her arms. I was 3, 4, 5 years old. He started racing there in 74, 75. And I was about 5 years old. So I used to really get dropped off. My mom used to go sit in the stands, and I used to play in the parking lot with our little plastic cars. And we used to race our little cars on the asphalt behind the grandstands. And then once we're done that, we did that for a couple hours. And then when the mains started, the consies, that's kind of when we went up. And he used to watch my dad. And so my dad raced there till it closed down. It closed down in 1981. He got me my first go-kart when I was 4 years old. So that was it. I was hooked. Between watching him race on the weekends and then me racing go-karts. And I was literally hitting all the tracks when I was 7, 8 years old. And I did a heavy one track championships, and I got picked up by a karting shop, and we just hit the road. I must have won, I think, 13 or 14 championships along the way. I won 3 gold cups. I won the Grand Nationals in Rockingham in 1991. And I kind of got out of it. I totally got out of kart racing in like 91, 92. And I just started doing a lot of road racing, doing Formula Ford. Went to Europe for 2 years, did Formula Opel. My background was I should have went Formula One, but I decided to go towards stock cars because my dad was a oval track racer. He liked Dale Earnhardt. He loved Jeff Bodine. And so I kind of went that way. After I did the European stuff, I did have a chance to go towards F3000, but it was going to cost money. And I was on my own. I came back home and I just said, you know what, I'm going to focus on NASCAR. And I started working for Richard Jackson in Denver, North Carolina. And I was spotting for Morgan Shepherd. And then literally in 2-3 weeks, I was in one of his ARCA cars, Richard Jackson. We finished second. Morgan Shepherd went to Jasper, and Richard didn't have a driver for the cup race. So after I finished second in the ARCA race, he's like, hey, Jerry, you did a good job tonight. You want to race at Michigan next week? And I'm like, you know, what does the guy say? You know, of course. So I got a shot, and that was it. My stocks took off.
It was a good time for you for sure. And I remember your debut because it wasn't just any track. It was Michigan International Speedway. And it wasn't like on a cable network. You got to make your cup debut on CBS. And Ken Squire was in the booth. Let me ask you from a personal perspective, how powerful is it to know that you were making your debut in that track with that network covering your debut with the circumstances of that race?
You don't think about all that stuff. That's all bogus stuff to me as a driver. I didn't know anything. I just went there with a black suit. I got into a car, a mediocre car. They were kind of on their way out. Richard Jackson wasn't going to stay in the cup racing much longer because it was getting too expensive. It was getting too big. NASCAR was huge in the late 90s, early 2000. And Richard was kind of a little team. And that's why Morgan left. And I get in his car and we're second fastest right off the bat. I mean, we went out in practice and I didn't know any better. And I was second quickest behind Jeff Gordon. And then all of a sudden, in qualifying, everyone's coming to me, like Dale Earnhardt. You're doing a good job, boy. And then he says, just qualify in the top 20. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. And me, I'm thinking, fuck, I can go get on the pole, you know? So I ended up putting the thing on fire in turn two just because I didn't know any better. Thing got sideways, backed in the wall, caught on fire. I went to the infield care center, and I get out of the infield care center, and who do I see? Richard Childress from Dale Earnhardt's team. He puts his arm around me. He goes, boy, let me tell you something. I clock everybody from the start finish line to turn two, and you had everybody covered by 2/10. The only thing is you were sideways. So that was kind of my initiation. That was my first time in cup. I was second fastest in practice. I put on fire in turn two. Then I took my backup car and I was fastest second day qualifying. So we started 26th, 27th, and we blew up. We had a speedway car and yeah, it didn't last long. So I only did five races in 97. I keep my rookie status, and then 1998 is when I went to Philly.
Yeah, with the Dan Marino team in the first plus 13 for Tours, which I still have in my collection somewhere in my bedroom, by the way, Jerry, after 26 years. And that was kind of an interesting season because you started with Bill and Dan, and then you ended the season with Melling, number 9 team. And I've got to ask, when things kind of went awry with Elliott and Marino, but you know, Harry Melling was like, "Hey, I want you to drive for my team." How much of a relief was that for you to get a second chance in Cup and have a home for basically a year?
Yeah, it was, you know, I really hated that it didn't work out with Bill because I loved Bill. I loved Bill and Cindy. I used to change diapers when he was running around naked in the shop. I mean, it was really a good, I loved Ernie Elliott. I loved all the boys, Dan. But we were hidden. We were hidden in Dawsonville. And, you know, Bill's race team was in Mooresville. So we were kind of left in the dark, you know, as a new team. And it's so hard, dude. It is so difficult to perform and be good and make races, you know, coming from a little town in Dawsonville. And, you know, when he's up here in Mooresville, but I'm not taking anything away from that because, you know what? It's what happened, you know. We qualified outside pole at Sonoma. We led the first lap until I went off the track. We had some decent runs, but then the team dissipated. I got let go 12 races into it, 11 races into it, and then they put a couple guys in there, but it's like they felt the team folded up. And then when I got let go from Elliott, literally the next week, I got a ride with Lake Speed was leaving the 9, and then Harry Melling and Mark Melling called me and said, "Hey, you want to drive the 9? And I'm like, "Yeah." You know, what do I say? I mean, I was living in an apartment. I didn't, you know, I was trying to make it as a racer. And so Mark Melling, I loved that team. If I had $30 million, I would have done it with them, and I would have said, "Let's build this team and make it a championship team." Why? Because I really liked the guys. The guys were all downhearted. It was a small team, but everyone gave it their best, and they loved it, no matter if we ran bad or good. But I just, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. The team didn't have a lot of money. We had Cartoon Network as a sponsor. We had a great sponsor because every week we had a different car. Mm-hmm. It was like one week it was the zombie car, next week it was the Astro, the next week it was WCW, next week it was Atlanta Braves. You know, so they had so many different concepts. But all in all, I mean, I enjoyed the 99 98, and I ran the whole 99 season, and they really wanted me to stay. But then that's when I got picked up by Hendrix, and that picture behind you with the win I had at Atlanta, that was cool. We probably should have had 5 or 6 wins, but yeah, unfortunately it just didn't work out.
But I will say this, and I think you may be taken aback by this, but I'm going to make a bold statement that my 15-year-old self felt at the time, Jerry. I felt that with Hendrick in a transition year in 2000, you were the first to, I feel like, find confidence and comfort in the new Monte Carlo. And I feel like you were the rabbit that helped Jeff Gordon's team get to the rebuilding to contending phase that they needed to in Charlotte, Atlanta, because you figured out how to drive these cars and Jeff was struggling, admittedly. And then all of a sudden, when y'all started to work together, get setups exchange at Charlotte in the fall, I mean, you guys were pretty much on par with each other. So, I mean, what was it like to work with Jeff and Hendrick?
Listen, those guys are great. I'm trying to get a job with them. You know, I've got to do something. Obviously, my racing career is over. I'm still a racing fanatic. If I plan on working with Hendrick, I'm going to work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and I'm going to have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off. Why? Because I'm a racing fanatic. I love to get in my underwears and watch. I watch Speed Vision, I watch Dirt Vision, I watch Flow Racing, I watch Racing America, and I'm just a racing nut. I love everything. Dirt late models, I love MotoGP, I love Formula One. And again, you'll see me watch, I'll watch a few of the NASCAR races. But I just, you know, I'm hoping that, that something may come up with Rick Hendrick and them over there, because I'm really, I want to do something. You know, I think, you know, I'm doing stuff now periodically, but I think I need to go work for a race team or keep my face out there. Who knows? It may be with Rick and maybe with somebody else.
I think they would benefit from having someone like you, because you've always been such a team player, someone who takes on the initiative. And that's something I noticed with you during your tenure with Hendrick. I mean, in 2000 alone, even before you won at Atlanta, which was the last race with ESPN, the original ESPN, you were always, like you said, you could have won five races, but you and Tony Furr and that 25 team, you guys were on to something. You almost won the Coke 600, as a matter of fact, with the Coast Guard car, as I remember. So yeah, twice. I mean, you guys are just so good.
Listen, it happened. I'm not coming up with any excuses. A lot of it could have been my fault. A lot of, you know, we just didn't have, you know, it's a lot of it is team. And you know what's funny is I love my guys. I love my team. I, matter of fact, I had lunch yesterday with four of my guys from the 25 team when we went at Atlanta. So I have a good relationship with those guys. But, you know, we were kind of the little team at the bottom of the hill, where now all the teams are together. They're on top of the hill. They have a beautiful area. And yeah, I mean, it just, I love Tony Furr. We had some awesome runs at places. We should have won Chicago. We should have won Charlotte twice. We had Atlanta won again, but we ran out of fuel with a half a lap to go. I don't know. I was telling my guys yesterday at Hooters while we're eating, I was like, guys, why didn't you just tell me to save a half a lap of fuel? We have a 12-second lead. We have a 12-second lead. All we had to do was save half a gallon of fuel. And unfortunately, yeah, it didn't happen. I ran out of fuel as soon as I came off turn two. I took the white flag. I had a 12-second lead. Took the white flag. I came off turn two, and it just died. And I had nothing left. It's like I took all the fuel out of the tank. And I just made it across the finish line. I was probably doing maybe 30 miles an hour, and we finished third place that day. So there's a lot of places we just, you know, we lost the oil pressure gauge. We were leading at Darlington. Then we lost a motor twice in the 600. So nothing against nothing. Maybe it just wasn't meant to be.
But if you got to have a feather in your cap in your Cup career, and we'll talk about the essay you did for this course. If you had to have a feather in your cap, Jerry, it's not bad to say that, hey, my only Cup win was against one of the greatest drivers of all time in Dale Earnhardt, and it one of his best tracks. Tell me more about that day in 2000 when you guys started second, and it was pretty evident you guys were here to play and win the race.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We started second there. But we started dead last the next race at Atlanta. We let it until the last lap. It doesn't matter where you qualify. A lot of it is, even today, it's kind of tough today. You know, the way the cars are so equal. But that race right there was amazing. It was on a Monday. It got rained out on Sunday. We raced on Monday. My dad was working. He had the radio on while I was winning the race, and he actually left where he was doing the job, and he went to a bar down the road with his guys to watch the end of the race when I won. And so yeah, that was, you know, it was almost like an awe. It was like, you know, it was like, God, it's about time I finally won. Because I've won in so many things. I've won in all the stuff I've done in the past. But damn, those NASCAR races are really hard to go about. You know, I'm used to the 30-minute races. I'm used to the 45-minute races, not 4.5 hours or 3.5 hours, but it's just a long deal. And you got to pace yourself. I wasn't used to that. You know, it was a new ball game for me, but I'm not making any excuses. It was part of what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a racer, a stock car racer, and I did my best. I tried my best. I looked and I had a pole. It doesn't show I had a pole, but I didn't realize the year I finished second at Dover, I qualified on the pole, but they gave it to Rusty because he did it first, not me. He broke the track record, but then I tied it. So I think it was 1999. I had the M&M's car.
That's right.
I was filling in for Ernie Irvin, and I qualified outside pole. We ran the same exact time. And here's what the cool thing is: Ryan Pemberton, my crew chief, and Robin Pemberton was the crew chief for Rusty Wallace. So they both shared the pole. So I literally have the pole, but I didn't get to keep the pole because they gave it to Rusty. So
another unique feather in your cap and the brotherly connection between the Pemberton boys.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to think how that worked. And that was your first or your second tenure, your two tenures rather, with MBT Motorsports, if I recall, because yeah, you did fill in for Ernie Irvin, which that's amazing that you were able to get that ride. You get to showcase what you did, got the Hendrick opportunity.
And I'm going
to
tell you. And I'm going to tell you how that happened with Hendrick. Is Hendrick wanted to see me into a Hendrick car. And the Ernie Irvin car was a Hendrick car. And it was a Hendrick motor. And it was run by MB2 Motorsports. So when I left Melling, they put me and they made me fill in with Ernie for like two or three races just so I can get used to the Hendrick cars. And we had great runs. You know, like Dover, we qualified, we were on the pole, but we qualified outside pole. And Ryan, I loved Ryan. I don't know if anybody knows, but we lost Ryan a couple weeks ago. Young, 54, 55 years old, whatever he was. It's just sad. I love the guy. And I know he had a good time. He had a good time with Junior Motorsports. They got a lot of wins in the Busch races, Xfinity Series. So, and I still got to see Robin there at the wake. So it was a big deal. Yeah, it got me prepared to go to the 25 car, and I was there with Hendrick for 2.5 years until I finally got let go, and then I went back to MB2 Motorsports for the U.S. Army car.
Right, and that was a ride that, you know, I still to this day, before what happened at Richmond, I was thinking, you guys, you found a great home, you had the speed, and everything was working together, but of course, you talked about what happened at Richmond in your very emotional, very moving essay for this course. I'm just curious. Like, I love when you said that your life is more like a work in progress and that life after racing is nothing to be sad about. Life is so nonlinear, Jerry. So I'm just kind of curious, how did you arrive at this point from 2003 to where we are today in 2024 to not so much to accept what happened, but to, you know, hopefully find some peace with what happened.
I don't think I'll ever have. I'm just a go-getter. I don't think I'll ever have peace. I'm still semi-young. I'm 54, going to be 55. I move like an 18-year-old. I do move sometimes like mashed potatoes. I'm not as sharp as I used to be. But I'm more fun, I think. More laid back. I do a lot of school in Tennessee at the Formula Ford PTC training center, and we have a 2.3-mile road course, and we've got 35 Skip Barber Formula Fords, and the school's great, and I do get to go out there and play with the guys and play with the drivers and help them, and that's where I feel like I'm really good at, because I love giving back and I love helping guys get better as drivers. So I play around with the schools. Plus I also do ride and drives. Last week I was in California, with the new Mercedes, vans, I can't remember the name, but I forgot. But I don't work for him. I just went there to train and show the guys the new electric vans. And it's amazing where time is today. I never thought of driving battery cars around. So yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm looking to possibly do something with Hendrick and do something there, you know, full time, part time. And I chase my kids around. I've got one in college. I've got one coming out of school here in about 10 minutes. And yeah, so life is good. I'm happy, and I don't know where I'll be. I'm not, you know, I didn't plan on retiring at 36 years old. And I don't know where I'll be down the road. I don't. And I think, you know, I'm okay with it, everything. I'm okay with life. It's just, it's a little harder now because, you know, I don't make the money I used to make. You know, I think I've averaged around 50,000 for the last 10 years, a year. And, it's a lot more difficult, but all in all, I'm happy. I've got a great wife. I got two beautiful girls, and who knows, maybe you'll see me at Hendrick's in a couple months working there.
If that's the case, I really hope that it does happen. And we can go back to this conversation to point out that that's the genesis of what, you know, you going back and making this full circle moment in their 40th anniversary season. And maybe as a fanboy in me, I'm rooting for that to happen because I just think Jerry Nadeau and Hendrick Motorsports goes together. Don't you think?
I hope. I haven't seen, I feel so bad because I haven't seen that. I had a good relationship with Ricky Hendrick. I bought a few bikes from him, motorcycles, dirt bikes. And then, yeah, I was just unfortunate with the whole shenanigan with the airplane accident and stuff. That, it just, so many bad things happened. But also good things, good fortune things. Look at Jimmy Johnson. I would have never known he would have won 7 championships with Hendrick. But Rick's a good guy, and he's got great people over there. Amazing people. And, you know, I went in there. I snuck in. It's like Fort Knox over there. You can't just walk in that place like I used to do it. I used to, you know, years ago in 2099, I used to sneak in that, walk in that place. I used to go around the whole building. Now you got to have a badge and you have to hit it against the door and the door will open up. And it's like, I had to wait. I had to sneak in and follow somebody through a door. And I had my old, I had this poncho right here, this UAW Delphi. This is like 30 years or 20 years old. And, so I snuck in and they're having a meeting. There's like 300 people working in the shop and they're talking up there. Chad Knaus is talking and all of a sudden, Alan Gustafson, Chase Elliott's crew chief starts talking and he starts saying how he's been there for 30 years. And he says, one of the fellows that I used to like, Jerry Nadeau. And I'm looking around like, is he talking about me? You know, so it was cool to hear that from him because I remember Alan back in the day when, you know, he was with Gary Dehart when Ricky Rutt or Terry Labonte. So there's a lot of good things there, and you know, who knows? Maybe my numbers, you know, come up now. Maybe I'll be there doing something. I don't care if it's cleaning toilets. I don't care if it's blowing driveways or doing something. Maybe I could be a chauffeur. I can, you know, take Rick from one building to the next on the golf cart. Who knows? I just feel like I need to be doing something like that. But all in all, I'm okay with it if I don't.
Well, whatever happens, Jerry, I really hope you get to do what makes you happy and feel connected to this sport that you have loved all your life, because I can tell you, you're someone I've looked up to for over 27 years. And I'm not saying that lightly. I am excited to talk to you as much as I would be talking to Jeff Gordon. That's how much I've wanted to talk to you. And it's so neat to hear these opportunities. Now, the one thing I do want to talk about with you is you have such a passion for dirt track racing these days. And I know for a fact you've even dabbled in iRacing. So I'm just kind of curious, how did this love of dirt track racing come about? And what has it been like for you to dive into iRacing?
Listen, dirt track racing is the heart of racing, I think. And you may hear that from Tony Stewart, Casey Kane, even Kyle Larson. I really feel like everyone should go through dirt racing before they get to stock cars. That's what I feel. I don't know why. You know, I started racing go-karts when I was 7 at local dirt tracks. I would do dirt tracks that run Sundays on road courses, asphalt. Then I would do asphalt ovals with carts. So, and then we dabble a little bit with the modified cars, and I also dabbled a little bit with the sportsman cars, dirt sportsmen on half mile dirt tracks. So I think dirt track racing is everything. It's car control. And that's where, I mean, yeah, I might have wrecked quite a few cars in cup racing, but you know, if you ain't wrecking, you ain't trying. That's how I look at it. I needed to have reins. I needed somebody to put reins on me and say, okay, Nate, that's enough. Don't go no more. Don't go no more. Yeah, that was just me. I was just a go-getter. I was just fast. I was on fire all the time. I just wish, you know, if there were 30-minute races, I think I could have won a lot more. But yeah, I realize it's a marathon. And yeah, and you know, I did well, and even in the endurance races on road courses, on asphalt, I had a good time there. It's really strenuous. I don't think people realize how really tough it is to win races in Cup. You got literally 40 of the best guys. And now I think it's even harder, you know, because the cars are so equal, they're all the same. And it's so great to see guys that you don't normally see. I'm looking at LaJoy. I can't remember his name. It's so sad. I know his dad really well, Randy. Anyway.
Corey LaJoy. Corey?
Oh, yes, Corey. Corey, yes. His brother is the announcer at Millbridge that I'm going to next week. So, the LaJoys. I love Randy LaJoy. I love his wife. We actually hang out with Randy at the suite at the dirt tracks at Lowe's. So, So dirt track racing, I think, is a really cool deal. I think if anybody can ever have the experience to do that, they need to do it.
Absolutely. And that's such great advice to share, not only for those in racing, but even journalists in themselves to get familiar with the stars in that circuit, whether they're going to go to NASCAR or stick to dirt track racing like the Kinzers did, or, you know, Casey Kane going back after several years in Cup. You're right. It's such a grassroots but passionate racing series that I'm even trying to get more familiar with again, because I grew up watching World of Outlaws with Steve Kinzer and Sammy Swindell. Mm-hmm. So that's how far back I go in terms of my knowledge of everything. But I know you got to pick up your daughter here, Jerry. So before we wrap things up, and I hope I get to talk to you again, because I've only gone through 6 of my 12 questions, so I wish I had more time. What if of the drivers today in the Cup Series, or any racing series, which driver do you feel like you can identify most heavily with, and why?
I love Kyle Busch and I love Kyle Larson, the two Kyles. I've always loved Kyle Busch. You hear a lot of stupid ass stories from people, fans. I hate you. You're such a dick. You know what? The guy's a effing driver. He is a badass driver, dude. Tony Stewart, Jeff Gordon, all those guys are just badass drivers. Kyle Busch is really good. I mean, the guy dabbled around with the dwarf cars on dirt and asphalt, and they learned the knack. And they learned the knack of driving a 3,600-pound race car very early. I love Kyle. He's a guy I really – yeah, I like those guys. I don't think I was never like them. Those guys are just really talented, and they have really good people around them. And I think they're prepared really well before they got into the Cup Series. I mean, look at Kyle Busch. When he started, he was 15, and he was in a truck, and they outlawed him at Michigan when he was the fastest guy out there. And I think it was like in 2000 or 99, he was going to make a run in the trucks, and they disallowed him. So anyway, yeah, those guys are really kind of. I like those guys. I know you hear a lot of crap, a lot of shit from other people. I do like the guys, the underrated guys. But as far as driving wise, those guys can drive on anything. I love Martin Truex Jr. I'm a big Matt Kenseth fan. Matt Kenseth lives right down the road. He's got a really badass place over there in Davidson. But all those guys, they're all good. Let me tell you something, they're all good. And if anybody gets a chance to get into NASCAR, it was so great to see Ray J guy win his first, what was that, a Busch race, right?
Yeah,
he drove the Hendrick cars. Or was that a truck? Was that a truck or was that a Busch car?
Yeah, it was a truck. Right. Vegas.
Yeah. Very cool. So yeah, I'm happy. I think racing's good. I think NASCAR's in a good position. I'm glad the cars are all the same and they're getting good and So, but now I'm such a race fan. I can watch everything from street stocks to motocross to supercross to. Yeah, I'll watch anything. You know, I'm just a big gear. I'm a motorhead. I'm a gearhead.
And that's the best part. Both of all of us, me and you, the people who watch this interview, listen to it. That's the one thing we all have in common. We all love racing, and as long as there's competition, no matter what era it is. Hey, we're all for it, right?
Yeah. No, and I think and listen, you have to be raised into it. You can't just come out of the woodworks and why is that God? You know, you gotta really understand racing, where it started, from the grassroots. You know, this is why I love Clint Bowyer. Clint Bowyer says it like it is. He's so down to earth, and I remember Clint Bowyer, he probably doesn't remember this. But when I was doing Horseman Gold Cup, he was in the rookies class, I think, or the juniors. So he was always behind me. Or he might have been ahead of me. I don't remember. Yeah, I was 54. He's not. I don't think he's 54. But, yeah, I remember all those guys. Tony Stewart was in two strokes, but I was in four strokes. So, and I heard about Jeff Gordon. It's so cool. A guy from Connecticut who was living in a house that was falling apart for $250 a month, make it into NASCAR. That's what's cool. I mean, my mom and dad got to see all that. They saw me leave high school and pack my bags, and I loaded up my Cutlass Oldsmobile diesel. It smoked all the way from Connecticut down to Charlotte, and I got a job driving the show car for Michael Waltrip. The Country Time Lemonade car. I drove the Interstate Batteries Bobby Labonte show car. Me and my friend Tony Hunt, who Tony is a 10-time USAC champion out on the West Coast. You know, it's a lot of grunt work, and that's how I felt like I did it, and that's how I made it. It was really a lot of sleepless nights. When I got that chance in 1997, I made it, and unfortunately, It was taken away just that fast in 2003 from that accident at Richmond.
But you are finding life once more. You're finding happiness. You're finding what it means to be Jerry Nadeau 21 years later. And I will say from the bottom of my heart, I'm so glad that you're still here. You're still getting to tell stories. You're still getting to be a part of racing. And I hope that you do get, whether it's Hendrick or wherever, that you get to be where you need to be, because racing needs you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate it a lot. Don't be afraid to contact Jen if you need to talk to me more. I'm around. Sorry, I wasn't prepared for this. I wanted to be in my office at home, relaxed with a t-shirt on, but I've been working and slaving, building shelves inside a shop that has no air in it. So I'm kind of a mess and dirty and. But no, this was really cool. I love your backdrop. I love the Earnhardt, the Michael Holligan car. That's really cool. And we'll talk to you again.
And that was Jerry Nadeau, who was in the hot seat. And my thanks, of course, goes to Jerry for taking the time recently to talk to me about his career, the accident at Richmond, and how he's basically redefined his life since the accident at Richmond, and basically just rediscovering his purpose and just moving on. And like he said, he's not going to ever find peace, but to live life. And I think that's the most important part, even when the circumstances that were dealt to him were pretty unfair. So that was really, really great to have him on our show. And again, I want to thank the team over at Discourse Magazine for making that happen, specifically Jennifer Theedman. She was awesome. She reached out to me immediately, and I was like, yes, I will do this interview with Jerry, and we'll have an article version of his story on TPF down the road for sure. But it's almost time to go and wrap up episode 108 of TPF Live. It's crazy to think we're only a couple more weeks away to the end of this month, and we're still on our good start to TPF's NASCAR coverage. So this weekend, of course, Wayne Riegel and Josh James are at Bristol. Landon Ciardulo held the fort by himself at Phoenix. So good job, Landon. And we got two experienced photographers this weekend. And then, by the way, next weekend, a certain person who hosts the show is going to be at COTA with four photographers. So I hope he does a good job. And I say he isn't me. That's just going to be a lot of things I'll be doing. I can't complain. And hopefully, maybe we'll even do a bonus podcast. I don't know. There's just so many great content that we have that I'm just trying to think of fresh ways to keep that vibe alive, I guess you could say. But my eyes will be on the race and also on what happens in March Madness. So this is one of those times where I'm glad I had two monitors. I can't have two monitors, unfortunately, at the racetrack. So I guess I'll do it the old-fashioned way and watch my phone and see what happens. But anyways, ladies, what are your closing thoughts before we wrap up our show?
I'm just really excited. I'm excited that it's back. I liked the dirt. It was a fun idea, but I feel like, I don't know, I'm ready for it to be back on concrete. I'm ready for, I don't know. I think it'll be a good race, and I'm just excited for it.
I am too, and I think it's going to be in a fantastic race, and I think a lot of people are going to show up because of the nostalgia and just knowing that we have a great short track package, at least when it comes to this track, for sure. So maybe the good old bump and run's going to happen again. We know that the PJ1's going to be involved, but we know that if you're good on the inside and that PJ1's there, but you happen to be good on the outside, like number five is, we're in for a great race. And a little bit of bumping and banging, a lot of good short track racing that you folks at home are been craving for, you're going to see it on Sunday afternoon. So while you're waiting on the, you know, selection day situation with your favorite college team, catch what's going on at Bristol. I promise you it's not going to disappoint you. You're not going to miss a Caitlin Clark game. So that's a win-win in my book, if you know what I'm saying. How about you, Brooklyn? What do you think?
I'm just really excited for Bristol. I think I'm obviously not unique in this, but Bristol has a special place in my heart and little NASCAR soul. It's just a fun track, fun vibes, fun racing. And I think both the truck and cup race are going to be good. And So we'll see what happens there.
I think it's going to be a fantastic race weekend. It's never usually a bad race at Bristol. And like I said, multiple grooves. PJ1's going to be applied on the bottom again. So there's going to be a lot of grip. But if you're a Kyle Larson type of driver who likes to ride and use that top lane, this is a heck of a weekend to see the battle between the bottom and the top. And there might be a brave soul who tries the middle lane. I don't know who. Maybe Carson Hocevar, because he's that kind of quirky driver.
Yeah.
So I love Bristol being concrete again. No offense to the dirt track surface. I know Nathan's complained about it for 2 years in a row. And go figure, he's not here for this weekend because I know he's had a lot of opinions about it. So when he's back from college hoops action, I'm sure he'll talk a ton about it. But for my closing thoughts, I think the one thing I've got to say is I love the momentum of NASCAR's start this season. I know Phoenix maybe kind of tempered things a little bit, but beyond the ratings being better than the last couple of seasons, it's just the fact that I feel there's a surge changing with the world of NASCAR. More people are paying attention to it. I don't know if it's the NASCAR Netflix influence. I know there's a certain, I guess you can call him an influencer, who's all he did was do one tweet, and now all of a sudden everybody knows about NASCAR. I'm talking about some person whose name rhymes with Robert. It's not me. But honestly, it's a great start to the year. I know it's only season 76, but there's just it feels like anything can happen in any race this year. But like what we've seen, no matter the car, no matter the generation, someone's going to stand out. Someone's going to dominate. And we'll just see if that person and team, once they figure out how to keep winning on a consistent basis, can they keep that up? Or is it a Kyle Busch 2008 situation or Denny Hamlin in 2010? I could see Skye again laughing in the corner, and I can almost see her lip singing, or not lip singing, but basically doing her little Instagram and TikTok to reel, where she's like, are you the driver of the number 11 FedEx sponsored Toyota Camry? No, I said I was choking. That's Danny Hamlin. I said I was choking. What's the difference?
that was amazing. I am completely diverting back. I am glad that the dirt is gone. The dirt was a fun experiment, but I'm glad to have the concrete back full time.
And it's the proper surface for Bristol Motor Speedway, no matter what anyone else tells you. It should always be that way. And dirt track racing belongs where the tracks that are purposely built for that. Right. You know, like an Eldora, like a Silver Dollar Speedway, or basically any of the tracks that are in the World of Outlaws or High Limit Racing series, which our team's super excited about. Cotton Bowl Speedway in Page, Texas. That's another track. But yeah, Bristol being back to how it is, you know, we're going to have content from the drivers. I'm going to guarantee you a lot of those drivers are going to tell the press, we're so glad it's concrete.
And they were pretty outspoken, especially for some of them, about like the dirt experiment needing to end.
Oh yeah, I mean, you could see it in their faces last year, and Kyle Larson was really vocal about it. And just the press release alone, he was just like, "I'm glad it's back to concrete. That's the way it should be." And that's saying a lot because he's a dirt track expert, to say the least. Yeah, so I mean, if Kyle Larson's saying to us, and he was really vocal, he's like, "I'm glad it's concrete again." You know that that's bad news, to say the least, about the dirt track stays being numbered. And I think when we get to Indianapolis later this year, a lot of drivers are going to be excited to race on the proper speedway layout. So it's one of those years where I feel like NASCAR is redeeming itself with choices. So that's my closing thought. So we'll get to that in the summer, and hopefully I'm actually at Indianapolis. That would be, as you kids would say, that would be so lit. I hope I'm not a grandpa for saying that. We'll see. I'm not. But anyways, I think this is the perfect time to go put a bow on this show. So for Brooklyn Jackson, Sky Twig, and Jerry Nadu, I'm your host, Rob Tiongs, and saying thanks so much for tuning in to TPF Live, the world's fastest hour of racing talk. For our 107 previous episodes, you can check those out on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Next week's episode 109, the post-Bristol pre-Coda edition of our show, and we're going to hit the ground running real hard in Austin, Texas for the first road course race of the year, and I cannot wait to get a bunch of interviews that will pretty much carry us into the summer months of TPF NASCAR's coverage. As I always like to say, let's all go get that checkered flag, and until next time, so long, everyone.